That's Emma and Paul.
Hello.
Because I wasn't recording before. How awesome is that? All right. Step one reads, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So we're going to start tonight on, in the doctor's opinion, Roman numeral XXVI. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we're sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. Doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may of course mean little, but as ex-problem drinkers, we say this explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Emma, do you want to go first or defer?
Defer.
The woman has chosen to defer.
Lady's choice.
Yeah, of course.
Microphone's very sensitive.
Hey, everybody, my name is Paul and I'm an alcoholic.
Paul.
Hello. Thank you, David, so much for asking me to speak tonight. Man, it's always such a pleasure to be here with you guys and to kind of spread the message that was given so freely to me. I have a home group. It's AA 101. I'm just going to knock that out of the way because this is very important. It's a great little group. We meet over at the hospital right around the way. It's on Sundays at 11 o'clock. We focus on the first three steps. It's golden, good stuff. Super strong sobriety in there. Lots of faces in this room have been there just yesterday. So it's nice to see you guys again. I've got a sponsor, and he's got a sponsor, and I assume he's got a sponsor. That's generally how these things work. And when I read through this for the first time, I didn't get any of it at all because I was reading it by myself. You know, one thing I do know, just to qualify real quick, is that I love to drink. I love it. I love that feeling when you're about like three drinks in and it really starts kind of taking over your body. And you just kind of start feeling it in your toes and your shoulders kind of relax. And you take that breath and all the pressure just is like, if you guys know what I'm talking about, then you're in the right place. Because like, I love that. And ever since the first time that I drank, I love that feeling, man. Because ever since I was a little kid, my brain's just always been working overtime. I'm always really incredibly worried about what people think about me, what you want from me, what I need from you, or what I need from you to get what I want from you, from me, for you, from me. Right? Like, that's just, my brain is always just running. And it just never stops. And I never realized how tight I was until I wasn't when I first drank. And, you know, I just remember being incredibly self-conscious as a kid. And I just remember that first time that I took a drink, it was a stolen bottle of whiskey from my aunt. I had raked her leaves. I felt owed. She didn't have any money because she was dying of cancer, right? So, but I needed money. I needed something in return for my job, the hard work that I had done for her. So I stole this bottle of whiskey off of her liquor shelf. And it wasn't enough to take it. I actually moved all the bottles and then moved all the dust as well. Because they didn't drink. They just had it out. But I was going to take it. And I'd never drank before in my life, but decided that I was going to hang out with some friends that night and I wanted to drink. Didn't expect to get drunk. I'd never been drunk before. I just wanted to drink. I don't know why. And the first couple of drinks that I took didn't do much, but that third long pull off of that bottle, I felt that warm to my toes, pressure release, shoulders out of ears. For the first time, I just felt right and I felt comfortable in my own skin. And I never realized I didn't feel comfortable. I just really realized how good I felt when I drank, and I realized how much I hated being sober. It's just the worst. I hate the way I feel when I'm sober. I just don't know how to live. And so it's really interesting. So that, you know, I also just a quick caveat, like my mom has been sober almost my entire life. She's been in this program. She's been working steps. She's been doing her thing for almost my entire life. My father, on the other hand, is a really sad case. He's one of those guys that just can't get it. He's never reached that bottom, even though it's been terrible. He just doesn't get it, and that's okay too, right? So I got these kind of two extremes in my life. And I remember my whole life, my mom kept telling me, oh, your dad's sick. Your dad's sick. Your dad's just a sick person. And that used to really make me angry. Because you know what? Like, F that. Dude, he's just a jerk. He's a bad father. He doesn't care about me. He breaks promises. He's always passed out when I'm over at his house. He just doesn't care. He doesn't care. And she's just always saying, he's sick. He's sick. I was like, no, mom. Like, people that have cancer are sick. Like, people that die of diseases are sick. He's just an a-hole. And I just really didn't get it, right? And even when I was actively drinking, I didn't get it. It never occurred to me once that there was something different with me, because I drank a lot and that was my normal. So it wasn't weird, it was normal. Like, I didn't think that I had a drinking problem or that there was anything wrong with the amount I drank, because that's just what I did. And I ended up hanging out with a lot of people that drank like I drank. So I kind of constructed this whole little world around my drinking that made it normal. And I never realized that, you know, once I start, I can't stop. Because every drink was my idea. Like, every drink that I poured down my throat was my idea, Paul Jeffries' idea. Come on, man, shut up. I'm Paul Jeffries. Like, if I want to drink, I'll drink, and I'm going to have some, and I just end up getting blackout, butt-up drunk all the time. That's just what happens. But it never occurred to me that I have an allergy to alcohol. That's insane to me. So really what they're saying is, Paul, once you start drinking, you can't stop. You get real thirsty when you drink. That's what separates us from other drinkers. My wife can have a drink and not even take two sips from it. I physically cannot do that. I did it a couple times. Worst nights of my life. They happened to be on a cruise with my wife and her family, and it was atrocious because I couldn't drink like I wanted to drink. And once I started, I just was like freaking out, man. I mean, I remember digging my hands in my nails in my hands so much I had like marks in there for like a week. I was just like, ah. So, you know, when I was reading through this with my sponsor, it just didn't make sense to me. It was always somebody else's fault. It wasn't that I had an allergy. I just like getting drunk, and you know, I could never really explain what happened when I drank or why certain things happened, but you know, it's just all funny. It's all fine. It's just gotten a little out of control, so I need some help. But what he was saying here was like, hey man, you got an allergy that most people don't have. And what that means is once you start, you can't stop. And he said that the other part of that is the obsession of the mind, which I assume we'll get to, or maybe not, maybe that's next week. But he's like, once you stop, there's no way to stay stopped. You're always going to drink again. But when you drink, you have no idea what's going to happen. And that is the cycle of suck that you get stuck in. And so that really made a lot of sense to me. And there was this kind of like flip side to this whole thing where he said, what's interesting is when people have an allergy, this happened to me just last night. My son and I ate an entire big can of pineapple. I don't know why. We just wanted to have some pineapple. So he's 5, and all of a sudden, I never put 2 and 2 together. My son started getting sores in his mouth, right? And I was like, oh, you know, it's just acid or whatever. And I started coughing. I was like, this is so weird. My wife is amazing. She gets on the internet, like, looks up. She's like, yeah, there's something in the juice that some people are allergic to. And in my head, I was like, well, I'm never buying canned pineapple again. Check. Right? Like, it's that easy. Right? I had an allergic reaction. Never buying pineapple. Right? Like, that's fine. Sorry, Harris Teeter. They do that 10 for 10 deal. It's a real good deal. Anyways. So I made it in my head. I'm never buying pineapple again for the rest of my life. Fine. Like, done. But I couldn't do that with alcohol. And so if I have this allergy, like, you know, if I have an allergy to anything else, I just don't eat it. But with this, it's just like, man, there's just something about it. And once I start, I can't stop, but I can't stay stopped. And it's just that crazy, like, mental push and pull that we deal with as alcoholics that is what we're alluding to here. So an allergy sounded absurd. Sounded like the dumbest thing ever. But when I really thought about it, it made a lot of sense, man. Because I've never met anybody that had an allergic reaction to, like, tree nuts where their throat swole up and they couldn't breathe. and just kept eating peanuts, right? But I did that with alcohol. My life, I broke out into horrible stuff in life. I broke out into like failed marriages and resentments and just a terrible life, and I had horrible consequences that were way worse than hives and some little bumps in my mouth. I couldn't leave it alone. I just couldn't. So that's what I got to that point.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name's Emma. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Emma.
Glad to be here tonight. And much like Paul, too, you know, for me, like in my experience, I had this like peculiar desire and like this demand for more, like whenever I drank after like a certain point, because it wasn't always like that for me. I started drinking when I was 12, and then, you know, like I had a lot of fun. My parents would let me drink on holidays and, you know, at family events, and my brother would like try and be like, ew. And, you know, I would try it, and then 5 minutes later, I'm like, oh, like sitting on a chair feeling like I'm on a merry-go-round, and I'm like, let me get some more of that, you know, and all the other kids are like playing with Barbies and stuff, and I'm like, no, I'm not doing that, you know? And, you know, I had fun, you know, and I made some older friends and hung out with my older cousins. And by the time I was 15, you know, at some point, it just, I stopped having the ability to be like, yes or no. It was always a yes. And like, like Paul said, like, I didn't know that. Like, I just justified it in my head because I was like, why would you not want to drink every day or every opportunity? For me, it was like every opportunity that I had, you know, and sometimes that was every day. It depended on the week, you know, like I never had a legal drink. I had to survive off of other people giving it to me, doing bad things to get it. And also, like, the manipulative things that I told my mom, like, I deserve this because, you know, I was brought up in a home where my father, he went to prison. So I used that. That was a great leverage hook. I deserve this. Like, you did this to me, you know? So, and I got away with it. But after a certain point, you know, I couldn't wake up and be like, I'm not going to drink today and not drink, you know, like it just happened. And then I was like, how did I get here? Because I woke up and I made a resolution. I was like, I'm not going to do this, you know, like New Year's, like, I'm not going to do this and I'm going to work on this and I'm going to do this instead. And I have homework and I have basketball practice and I have goals. But then at some point I would walk through the kitchen and then I open up the refrigerator and I'm supposed to be getting milk. And then it's just like a shiny bottle of vodka, you know, Grey Goose glistening with the little, you know, dew points all the way in the back of the fridge. And I'm like, why not? You know, like two shots isn't going to hurt me before school. And that was just my life, you know, like what it is saying in this paragraph is like, along with being like having that like insanity in my mind, like I always think it's a good idea to drink, I have this physical aspect of, you know, the disease of alcoholism. But again, like I didn't know what that was. Like I wasn't aware of what I was suffering from when I came in here, like to be honest. I had been to rehabs, I had been to treatment centers. I had been, you know, doing things that they had told me to do, yet I was not staying sober. Like I would finish and then like 2 weeks later I was doing the same thing. So it's like when I got here I was like, I really don't know, you know, like just help me, because I was miserable because I wasn't getting that relief. So this, all this means to me, like an allergy is like every time I drink, like every time I just have one, you know, like obviously that never really happened, but like the first one, after I ingest the first one, I have this peculiar demand for more and it won't stop. physically until I get it in me. And, you know, along with an obsession of the mind that drives me to do that when I'm not drinking. And it's like, yeah, like, I had the ability to, like, stay sober for, like, 3 days. I had the ability to stay sober for 2 weeks. I had the ability to stay sober for 9 months. But I was never able to, like, stay stopped. And for me, it's like the last drink I had, like, that 9 month period, I remember, like, I was in treatment, I had relapsed, and then after that, like, the first day after that, it was like I did it for like 2 weeks straight, and I just couldn't stop. And I didn't know why, you know, but this makes sense, you know, and it interests me because I don't know why I drink like that, you know? So it is interesting, and it is really, like, amazing that a doctor, like, historically, that a doctor went out on a whim, you know, in the 1930s, early 1940s, and said this stuff, you know, his opinion. Because in the first edition, his name wasn't printed, you know, Dr. Silkworth. And for me, like, alcoholism runs in my family. So I heard all the stories of, yeah, well, Aunt Zelda, she died in, you know, the psych ward from, like, I don't know the medical term right now because my brain's kind of, like, dead. But, you know, of, like, shock because of all the ice baths, you know, that they had to give her because she was an alcoholic. And that was, you know, in the the early 1900s. And it's, like, it's a long line. And I would hear all the stories. Uncle Johnny killed him and his wife, you know. So, I mean, we're going to get into it more. But as an ex-problem drinkers, we can say that this explanation makes good sense. And it's, like, of course. Like, it sounds like gibberish to me when I come in. Like, allergy, like, an autoimmune response. Like, what? Like, I should just take Benadryl, Poppin' Benny's, you know, and get a certificate from this place. Like... But, you know, I had to have someone go through this book with me. Because, like, even now, like, explaining this to somebody else, like, I didn't get it. But thankfully, I had someone who was gracious enough to sit down with me and talk with me and explain it to me. And it makes sense. So that's all I have for now. Thanks.
Thanks, Emma. All right, we're going to continue on XXVIII, or 28 in ruminal numers. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Paul?
Yep, that sounds familiar. Sorry, man. There's a lot to pack in. I'm trying to make sense of it in my head. There's just so much in that reading right there. I friggin' love to drink. I do. I hate the way I feel sober, guys. I'm going to be honest with you. Like I said before, I didn't realize that until I first got drunk. But after I broke that seal, I wasn't right again. Like, the world just didn't seem right unless I was drinking. I'm kind of like Emma. Like, I wasn't an everyday drinker, but when it was there and it was time to go, I was ready. And I was thinking about when I knew that I was going to be able to drink like I wanted to drink. You know, like when you're a kid and you got like a 3-day weekend and it's Sunday and you're like, yeah, I got another day. Like, you just get so excited about life. That's how I felt when I knew I was going to be able to drink like I wanted to. I just was so excited. And I would start game planning like days before, right? A lot of my drinking I did when I wasn't old enough to buy it, but I would just, all right, so this guy washes dishes at the restaurant. I'm going to pay him $10 every day that I work. That way I can get enough Natty Ice to go to this party and just have a really good time, and I'll have enough to give to other people and still get drunk as I want to. And okay. And I was just devoting so much of my energy to game planning the perfect nights or the perfect weekends, or you know, I remember my wife used to work in this job where she was like, she worked for a cosmetics company, so she would go like travel all these shows and like go on stage and present, and she would be gone for a weekend, and oh, I could drink like I wanted to because I couldn't do it in front of her. So I would just get so excited, man. I would start like planning on what I was gonna buy, and I would start saving more money, and she would go out of town, and it would finally be there. Just put on like a Batman movie, start pounding bottles of wine. It was amazing. And just like, it sounds really sad, but that's what I did. So anyways, that is not a normal, that's not what regular people do. Like, I didn't know that. I thought it was normal because that's what my life was. You know, I thought it was normal. I'm going to throw this story in there because David was talking to me yesterday about it. He misses it. I used to, so I wanted to drink so badly, like I wanted to, and I couldn't because I was married. And so I divorced her so I could drink like I wanted to. And this is all made up in my head. She's a completely amazing woman, and I'm such an idiot. But so I couldn't drink like I wanted to, so I divorced her. Well, I ended up living at my mom's house. 26-year-old crash pad, man. You know, that's where we go. Like alcoholic sons love crashing at their mom's house. If you're still there, it's okay. It does get better. I've been there. No judgment. No judgment at all. But here's the deal, man. I wanted to drink so badly, but could not. But I couldn't figure out a way to do it. I couldn't justify it. So I started coming up with really elaborate ways to justify my drinking. And one of my brilliant ideas was I was going to become a connoisseur of fine bourbons and whiskeys. And so I would go to the liquor store, and I would buy maybe like, you know, 6 to 12 of the best bottles that I could find there, right? Like Wild Turkey and stuff. So anyways, I would line them up. And mind you, I'm living in my mom's house, who is a recovered alcoholic. And I'm in the room 7 feet away from her room, in this like spare bedroom, and I'm like, I made this really pretentious desk out of like sawhorse tape legs and like a nice piece of wood, and I feel like I'm really sophisticated. So I'm sitting in my office in my mommy's house, and I line all these bottles up, and I get a glass, like a nice rocks glass, pour the first one in there, warm it upon my hand, right? I'm warming it, I'm smelling it, I have a notebook. And I'm like making notes about these whiskeys and these bourbons. The taste of new charred oak and green apples. And so I'm doing like all this stuff because I needed to drink. I couldn't justify it in my head because my life was falling around me. It was destroyed. I was falling apart at the seams, but I still had to trick myself into drinking like I needed to drink to be right. I didn't know that. I thought I was just being a connoisseur. But looking back on it, it's really sad. And so... I love you, Iran. So it's just interesting because, you know, it says these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And, you know, when I first came in here, I was so beat down by drinking, dude. I was so done. I did not want to drink for the rest of my life. What happened was I started sitting in the rooms of AA and not doing a darn thing. I was like in AA, but I wasn't a part of AA. I was just kind of like in, but not a part of. And so I wasn't drinking, but I had no solution. And I started freaking out. Freaking out. When I tell you freaking out, imagine what your worst case scenario is, multiply it by 10, and you're not even close. Because it is so bad. Not being able to drink and not wanting to drink, but not knowing what to do with your hands. And that's, when I tell you I was about to pop, I almost exploded. But at the same time, I started making all these deals with myself. Maybe if my mom gets sick, people will understand if I drink again. Maybe if my wife gets real sick and passes away from whatever disease she has, I can, like I start making up all these scenarios where it would be okay for me to drink again. What's that all about? like, the story has shown that every time I drink, I destroy my life and those around me. So why do I continue to think that it's a good idea? It's because I have that allergy. Why do I continue to drink even when I don't want to? Why, when I stop and I can't take another drink and I desperately don't want to drink again, why do I feel the urge to drink again? Why? Newsflash, I don't have a drinking problem. Oh no, I have a sober problem. That's what the crappiest piece of information you're probably going to hear tonight is. We don't have a drinking problem, right? I've got a terrible sober problem that I treated with alcohol for years. Then you take away my solution, I don't know what to do with my hands. I am freaking out. And, you know, there were times where I knew I needed to cool off from drinking. Lots of those. I've got plenty of those. But when I truly did not want to drink and I couldn't stop myself from drinking, that scared me. When I stopped drinking and couldn't stop thinking about drinking, that scared me even more. And when I desperately did not want to drink and did not want to think about drinking and all I could do was think about drinking, I knew I was screwed. And that's, to be honest with you, the best thing that's ever happened in my life. It's the only reason I've started doing your steps and got a sponsor, because I was a year separated from alcohol, and I didn't want to kill myself because I care way too much about myself, but I did not want to exist, if that makes sense. Couldn't kill myself because I can't do that, but I did not want to exist, and I didn't know what to do. And thank God I got to that place, because it's the only reason that I reached out to somebody and asked them for help, because I had no more answers. Once I drink, I can't stop, and once I stop, I can't stay stopped. I'm screwed. Like, I'm screwed. Thank God. Like, thank God.
Thanks, Paul.
That's it.
Yep. So I wish I had, like, the ability to write while I was drunk. Maybe I could have been, like, successful, but my excuse was, like, oh, like, I'm going to get drunk tonight because I have to write this paper and I want to be like a nonfiction writer. And like all the great writers, you know, like they, you know, Ernest Hemingway, like, went to Venice and just isolated himself on an island and walked around and like sat in the shade and like wrote all these great stories, you know. So like my room was like my sanctuary and I would sit there and like do this, but I would end up like drooling on the paper and like and I just, it's just like, I remember like this haiku assignment, and I was actually looking at this the other day, and I was like, I'm drunk, everyone's drunk, ha 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 ha, to like make all of it. And I actually like turned it in. And I'm just like, did I really think that was like, you know? And that's like the, you know, what this is saying again, you know, like I cannot, my life when I'm drunk, when I'm drinking, I mean, and this is true for like normal people too, you know, like when you're in that state of mind, you know, the biochemistry of the brain, you know, it's like I'm so present that it's like I'm not able to be thinking of anything else except now. And it's like everything around me, my perception is what that is in that moment, you know, and it's completely skewed, obviously, because I'm under the influence of alcohol. So it's like, why can't I stop? You know, like the $1 million question. Mm-hmm. You know, that not only, I mean, everyone else was like pretty much asking me that until after like five times, I was like, oh yeah, maybe I like can't stop on my own, or like treatment, I don't know if that really works. Maybe I need to like do passages in Malibu, because that was so I was like obsessed with that. I was like, I just need to go to passages in Malibu. Like, mom, come on. Like, you can take one more mortgage out of the house and send me to this place. Like, and she's already like, I don't know if you're going to have, like, a college fund. But, I mean, for me, it's, like, chronic. Like, I don't, I mean, for me, what that means is, like, I do the same thing over and over again. You know, like, chronic. Whereas, like, normal people, like, it's, like, acute, you know? They get drunk once in a while, you know? And maybe not even that, you know? Like, my mom literally has one glass of wine, like, one glass of wine every single night. Her lips get like purple, and I'm like, and she goes to bed. And like, maybe like once or twice a year, she'll have like a few Long Island iced teas, and that's it. You know, but it's like, for me, like, again, it's like, it doesn't matter like what form, like what this is saying is like what any form of alcohol. So it's like liquor, beer, like any, I don't know, there's like nothing else, is there? Like, beer or liquor, like any form at all. You turned it over.
I'm sorry.
I cannot use alcohol in any form at all. You know, so it's like with my friends, not with my friends. And it's like, I mean, I love analogies, so it's kind of like this whole allergy thing, you know. I don't want to beat, you know, a dead horse, but it's like, it makes sense because it's like, my grandmother, she was diabetic, you know, and it's like, it's an autoimmune response to glucose. Like, your body cannot absorb it. So you cannot, like, you know, the hormone that is secreted, it doesn't work, you know? So it's like, she doesn't eat, she can't eat granulated sugar, brown sugar, coconut sugar, pink Himalayan, no, that's salt. Whatever, like, whatever it is, like, she can't have it in any form at all. And she doesn't wake up and say, I mean, she's passed now, but, like, she wouldn't wake up and say, oh, like, I'm diabetic, type 2, and I'm gonna try, like, this chocolate muffin that was made with, like, brown sugar. You know, it's like, you can't do that. But it's like, for me, with drinking, I'm like, maybe if I do this, maybe if I try this, you know, maybe if I do, like, a cocktail. And for me, a cocktail was, like, three different types of liquors mixed together, like, Southern Comfort, Bacardi, and tequila. Like, that doesn't work, and... yeah, it didn't taste very good, but... It was like, I would only have to drink, like, this much, and I was pretty good for, like, a few hours, you know? But, you know, what does that make me? You know, like, I am trying to, like, figure out how to control my drinking, and I can't, you know... It, I mean, that's kind of humiliating, you know? Like, I can't control what's going down my throat. So it's like, I'm losing my self-confidence. My friends are like, I can't help you. You know, I'm realizing that I can't rely on other people to fix it for me. And my problems are becoming astonishingly difficult to solve. And it's just like, this paragraph just is like screaming like, why to me? You know, so that's all I have because we're running out of time.
That's a great segue because the next paragraph tells us why. In one simple sentence, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. We can go home now.
Cha-ching.
The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless the person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Paul?
May I ask a quick question to determine the length of my share? Do we have another paragraph after this? Okay. All right, so look, I love drinking because I hate being sober. I hate the way I feel sober. And when I drink, I get, you know, I've done other drugs, I've done other stuff. Nothing touches it like alcohol does for me. It just, it puts me in a place where I just don't care. And that's amazing for me, because I just want to be okay. I don't need to be great. I don't need to be, like, the worst. I just want to be okay. And I struggled my whole life to find that middle. And the only time I found it was when I was drinking. That's it. I mean, that's it, man. When you compound that with the, like, that just, that desire to be okay and not knowing how to do that, if I only feel okay when I'm drinking and I have that allergy, when I start, I can't stop. I generally overshoot the mark, except for one or two nights here or there where I kind of fool myself into believing that I have some sort of control over this thing because I only had like 5 beers and I didn't like end up blacked out. I remember those nights because I was like, I got it. No, you don't have a problem, man. You're good. Good to go. I just am restless and I feel so uneasy so often. Before I got sober, and before I started working the steps and before I really started doing this whole AA thing, if you're on the fence or you're just starting, man, it gets better. I promise you. It really does, dude. I'm not the same person that I am when I came in here at all. You know, I'm still dealing with some of the same issues, but my life is incredible, dude. I'm going to be honest with you. My life really is good. And if you wanted to listen to me, I could find stuff to complain about. But really, my life's better than I ever thought it could be and what I wanted it to be. And you know, I never cared about other people's drinking because I only care about myself. I didn't care what you guys were doing. I generally hung out with people that drank, but I don't care what other people are doing. I want to drink like I want to drink until I feel comfortable, which is generally many drinks in. And so I'm going to be honest with you here too. I never really cared to try and quit. Never did. Loved it. Loved drinking. Did not even ever once really try to quit ever. I made some resolutions to like cool off. I made those resolutions like I won't drink that again, or I won't mix that again. Like I made a lot of resolutions like that, but I never really made a decision to stop drinking. The only reason I did decide to stop drinking was because I almost died for the umpteenth time drunk. I woke up in the middle of the street, laying in the street, not in the gutter like respectable alcoholics. I was in the damn street. I was covered in throw up. I was under the bumper of a truck. This guy kicked me awake. And the only reason that I decided that I had had too much and that I needed to not drink again, because I almost died again. I was just scared. I was scared. I was scared. And that's the only reason I decided that maybe I can't drink like I want to. And so I came in here. And I did not do a darn thing in this program for over a year, and it was the worst year of my life. And if you're in that right now, if you are an alcoholic like we are, and you're just not drinking, like you're in the right place. Like we'll pray for you after the meeting. That is terrible. The only solution that I have to this issue is to follow in the simple actions of this program, growing in a spiritual relationship with something bigger than myself, which at first was AA, and now is a kind, loving God that I've come to know over time only because I've tried to have a relationship. You don't just get it. You have to work towards it. That's what's caused this psychic change in me. I don't want to drink. Somewhere along the line, the urge to drink has just vanished. It's just not there. I don't care. I could take it. I just don't care. But what I am left with is the real problem, which is my alcoholism. The only way I know how to beat that is to do what you guys have told me and to get on my knees and pray every day. And that's what's caused the psychic change.
So, like, this paragraph is just explaining, you know, like, not only me, but also just, like, people in general, like, why they drink, because the feeling produced by it. And I never drank for, like, the taste. You know, I never drank for any other reason, you know, like it didn't make sense to me why people would like take so long to drink their drinks and like they'd be like, this tastes so good, like you should try this like peppermint schnapps, which tasted horrible anyway, but you know, like, oh, it tastes good, like I'm gonna like make love to it, you know, like sip it like minusculely and take 3 hours to drink it and I'm like sweating and I'm like, can you hurry up so, like, I don't look like a crazy person? Like, I've had, like, 5 and you've only had, like, half of yours. So, You know, and this is just like a day in the life of me. Like, I wake up and, like, I'm uncomfortable in my own skin. You know, like, I react emotionally to everything throughout the day. You know, if I'm angry, I'm reacting angrily. If I'm depressed, I'm reacting in a depressed way. If I'm afraid, I'm reacting out of that self-pity or fear, whatever, insecurity. You know, and then on top of that, it's like nothing is ever enough for me. So, like, no wonder why I need to drink. Like, I don't know how other people deal with life, but, like, it's a good option for me. Until it's like I have no control whatsoever. And I start doing things to other people and I'm hurting others. But this is just explaining, like, okay, so I'm feeling like that. I take a drink, I get relief. But then at some point I become an alcoholic. And then, you know, I have that phenomenon of craving. You know, this allergy that comes in the form of that phenomenon of craving, which just for me is like this insistent desire for more. But nothing is, like, it doesn't matter the amount, it's still not enough. And then I go through that bender, you know, get drunk, extend the weekend through the week, and there is just no weekend, it's just the week. Like, there is no end to the weekend. So, and then that happens, and then I finally, like, stop at some point, and I'm like, I wake up and I have some sort of moment of clarity really quick, and then I'm like, oh no, I'm not gonna do this. Like, it's like I come out of a coma and I'm like, oh my god, like, what did I do? And I'm not gonna do that again. But then those feelings of, like, I can't, like, itchy, like, I didn't go up to people and be like, can I have a drink? Like, I feel so uncomfortable in my own skin and I hate myself right now. Please, like. I was just like, give me a drink now, you know? I didn't know. So it's like, that happens again and again and again because everything is just so overwhelming. And it's like, this is, I'm screwed, you know? Like, I'm screwed. But the hope is that I can experience a psychic change, you know, and what that means for me is that all of those emotional things that I'm feeling, which, you know, ultimately cause me to drink, can be relieved through this program. You know, I find an alternative, a substitute of that ease and comfort, which in the beginning for me was the fellowship, the power of the fellowship, and then eventually that led me to finding a power greater than myself. So that's what being recovered is. And of course, like, I still get uncomfortable and, like, I'm not immune to, like, the human experience, but I don't drink anymore when I'm feeling some sort of way, like, say, oh, I'm, you know, going to this job interview, I think it would be a good idea to maybe have a few drinks to ease my nerves. Like, I have a substitute and I do the actions that I've been taught and that are laid out in this book and I get relief. So, like what Paul was saying, like, I don't have a desire to drink. Sometimes I think about it, I'm like, oh yeah, like, maybe I'm missing out on something. And then a sane thought comes and it's like, no, like, remember when you, like, stole 3 cars and, like, slept with your best friend's boyfriend and la-da-da-da-da-da, you know? Can't do that.
But there's more to it.
So it's like the sanity has been returned, but that's only been because I've done this. I can't just sit in meetings and, like, hope for that to come. I gotta do something, so that's all I have.
Thanks. Okay, these last two paragraphs, I'm just going to read them in one sitting, are on Roman numeral 29 and 30. I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I've had many men who had, for example, worked for a period of months on some problem or business deal, which was to be settled on a certain date favorably to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all other interests, so the important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. Here's the bad news. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Paul?
Entire abstinence. What is that? Oh. Yeah, man. So look, I'm screwed when it comes to alcohol. I have a really good sponsor, and he has just drilled into my head over the past whatever years, it doesn't matter, that Paul, you're screwed when it comes to alcohol. You're screwed when you try to manage your life. Bad news is you're gonna probably try and do both all the time. He was just like, look, man, you cannot drink. It is off the table, it's off the menu, like he likes to say. Off the menu. Cool, man, I get it. Check. And I've just had that beaten into my head through experience and through a good sponsor. But I gotta tell you, man, when I wasn't working these steps and I wasn't doing this thing, I lived in this, it was like somebody shook up a snow globe and I was just in it. Just like, ah! I was just like, everything was flying around and I just couldn't, it was nuts, dude. My head was like a snow globe and I was freaking out. Because all I desperately wanted to do was feel okay. That's all I've ever wanted. I don't know how to get that on my own. I just know that if I drink, I don't know what's gonna happen. And I'm fully aware of that. I do know that also if I stop doing these steps, man, I don't think I'm gonna drink tomorrow, but I sure as heck am gonna get super, super uncomfortable in my sobriety. I'm gonna get really weird and isolate. I'm gonna push my family away. I'm gonna end up not seeing my kids and my wife. She's gonna divorce me. I'll probably end up losing my job because I'll stop caring. And then I'll just be left alone. Ooh, right? Like that sounds awful, but I know that that's what's waiting for me. And eventually on the other end of that, I'm gonna get a case of the effets because that's what I always get. I can't say that word because we're recording, but that's what I get. I get a case of the effets. It'll always be bad enough. My thinking will always get me into a situation where my life becomes bad enough that I will drink again, right? Doesn't have to be that way, but it would be if I wasn't doing this program. AA has saved my friggin' life. It's shown me that I'm screwed when it comes to alcohol, that alcohol was never the problem to begin with, oh no, and that the only way to stay abstinent of alcohol is to rely on something bigger than yourself. At first, it was the 12 steps of AA, then it became the 12 steps of AA and really studying the book, and then it became, hey, are you praying? No. Okay, let's pray and get a higher power in your life. Okay, you got it, boss. And eventually, over years, I've come to a place. This is not an overnight thing, man, but I promise you and I swear to God that this thing works unlike anything you've ever... It works. They figured it out. It's over. You're okay. It's over. They figured it out like 90 years ago. It's in here. If you have somebody that's properly armed with the facts about themselves, which is what we've been talking about, and you do these steps and you try to live this way of life to the best of your ability, your life will be completely different than what you think it should have been or could have been. That's been my experience, and I see a lot of people nodding out there, so it seems to be the experience of a lot of people in this room. You cannot stay stopped on your own. That's what I've been told. I'm not preaching. That's just what I know to be true. Paul cannot stop on his own and stay stopped. I can stop, but I can't stay stopped. The only way that I've been able to do that and that alcohol has become a non-issue in my life is to practice these steps and these principles. And if you're struggling, man, and you're new, just please grab somebody. Go through this book, dude. It really will change your life. And God, I'm just so blessed to be a part of this program, man. So thank you guys for being here.
Thanks, Paul.
Like Paul too, you know, for me, trying to stay stopped on my own was like working, you know, a full-time job. Like maybe like running a daycare center all by myself, you know, no help. No. Like, don't do that. No, get that out of your mouth. Cause it's like, that's in my mind. And it's just like, that word, like fight, you know, that's what that means for me. You know, like that's my definition. Fighting constantly with not only myself, you know, this internal struggle, but just everything around me. Because when I am not drinking, like my life is worse, obviously, because I'm not getting any ease and comfort, you know? And obviously, a non-alcoholic wrote this, and that's why it's called The Doctor's Opinion. And in the next few chapters, it says we describe alcoholism as we understand it. You know, because Dr. Silkworth only had an understanding through his patients, you know? So, entire abstinence, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. That's very vague, and for me, my sobriety, like maybe in the beginning, like yeah, it was abstinence because I was just staying away, you know, I was distracting myself and I was going to meetings and I don't really know what AA is and I don't really know how to stay sober. But I was desperate enough to stick around. But after I had worked the steps and being here now still, I don't believe for me, like abstinence would be the right word because the obsession and obviously this physical craving because I haven't had a drink has been removed. So it's, you know, I really like this thing in the back where it preludes to the pioneer stories of AA and it says release from alcoholism. And that's kind of what like I try to relate this word to, abstinence, like release from alcoholism can be permanent. And permanent is kind of an uncomfortable word. But all I'm going to say and with this is that, you know, permanent, for me, that's just promised if I continue to do this one day at a time, you know, I will get the results that are laid out if I do what you guys do. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much. That was great. We're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. Seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? Lydia.
Hi, my name is Lydia. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lydia.
And my home group, Joys of Recovery, does not invite you to the meeting this Thursday night in Chesapeake because they're having vacation Bible school, but your children are welcome to go there. We're going to go out to dinner before, but there will not be a Joys of Recovery meeting this Thursday in Chesapeake at 8 p.m., but there will be the following.
Thank you. Ashton?
My name is Ashton. I'm an alcoholic. Yes. Ashton. August 12th at 1 p.m. This is the last one going down, so we should know we're going to be Hampton Roads area, one of the There's all kinds of positions available. After the election, we're going to have a barbecue pool party. So if you're interested in what we're doing, please reach me after. Also, July 22nd, ECPAW and DCPAW, the Eastern Area Conference, the Young People in AA, and DC's White Bond Group, they're having a millennial speaker dance. And I have a flyer, so if you want to go to that, see me after. There's also a way to be of service for that.
Thank you. Kyle?
I'm Kyle Adams, alcoholic.
Kyle!
My home group, the Cornerstone Group, on 800 Colonial Avenue, is right around the corner from here. We're having our fifth anniversary celebration. It's going to be a luau theme. Please bring a dish if you wish. Starts at 5:30 on August 5th. Thank you.
August 5th, 5:30. Bring a dish if you wish.
Cool. Speaker starts at 7.
Any other announcements for the good of AA? There is literature available over here. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you need some literature. If you can fold it, it's free. The books we offer at cost, but we're not picky about that either. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after the meeting. Please feel free to come up and have a chat. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. We're not the only ones who use this facility. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. I skipped a line somewhere. Simple Actions is a home group. Would home group members raise their hands? If you're interested in joining the home group, please see one of us. Thank you. I missed the reason why we're here in the first place. Newcomers. Is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of recovery? We just like your first name so we can welcome you.
My name is Chris. I'm
an alcoholic. Hey, Chris.
Chris, welcome.
Anybody else? Right on. What else did I miss? Okay. I'd like to thank all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol. That's 22nd and Colonial. And could we give another hand to our lovely panel? Is there somebody willing to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? BJ, thank you.
BJ.
Works when you work it.